Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-1095, Louis L. Boniface, Petitioner versus United States Department of Homeland Security et al. Ms. Ferguson for the amicus curiae, Mr. Schultz for the respondents.
May it please the court, I am Sean Andrews here from Duke Law School, appointed amicus in this case, and I am pleased to introduce Megan Ferguson, law student from Duke, to present argument on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Louis Boniface.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Louis Boniface is a U.S. citizen and a commercial truck driver. He's been deprived of an important occupational license and branded a security threat by the Transportation Security Administration. TSA deprived him of this license in 2008 based on a more than three decades old conviction from 1975. I intend to focus on two arguments. First, by attaching a new legal disability to Mr. Boniface's 1975 conviction, TSA's regulations are impermissibly retroactive. Second, and alternatively, TSA's waiver ineligibility order is procedurally and substantively flawed. I will address these arguments in turn.
You're not, or are you, conceding that there is an outstanding valid conviction?
Your Honor, we're not conceding that there is an outstanding valid conviction. We do believe that this court could prevent the Transportation Security Administration from using Mr. Boniface's 1975 conviction to disqualify him by enforcing the Interstate Agreement on Detainers, by enforcing that law's categorical mandate that where there is an anti-shuttling violation on an untried indictment, there cannot lawfully be a conviction.
I won't deter you from your argument on the other points, but I may come back to this.
Okay, yes, Your Honor. With respect to retroactivity, the crux of the controversy is whether TSA's disqualification regime operates retroactively, and it does. It does by attaching to Mr. Boniface's past guilty plea a new legal consequence and disability, occupational debarment. It acts retroactively by giving his conduct a new quality, that it is probative of a present disposition or desire to commit or aid acts of terrorism.
Well, you acknowledge that the statute directs the agency to look at his history. Is that correct?
Your Honor, yes. 5103A does speak in terms of background checks, but it also speaks in terms of individuals. It says that a state may not issue to an individual a hazmat license until TSA has determined that that individual does not pose, present tense language, does not pose a security threat warranting denial of the license.
So, and that would mean the sexual psychopath statutes, et cetera, are all impermissibly retroactive as well?
No, Your Honor. For example, in the case of Kansas versus Hendricks, the civil commitment determination, that requires Kansas to make a current finding of dangerousness. And that finding, in order to make that finding a past sexual offense, is necessary but not sufficient to purport to support civil commitment. Here, we believe that a past criminal conviction could be used, and the information in a background check could be used as a starting point to separate individuals with clean background checks from individuals who would need to be subject to an individualized determination of security threat by TSA.
Well, the agency made a current evaluation of the nature of this conviction, saying it was a very dangerous conviction and relevant to the purposes of the statute.
Your Honor, the TSA spit out a threat assessment based solely on the fact of the conviction. It didn't have any information about potential mitigating circumstances about the conviction. It didn't have any 21st century evidence
of... Suppose they had all that. Would this go away?
If TSA had rehabilitation evidence from Mr. Boniface, had a complete file on him, and it made an individualized determination of present security threat, then that would solve the retroactivity problem in our view.
Why isn't that solved then through the waiver procedure?
Your Honor, the waiver procedure is not a cure for retroactivity because in many, if not most cases, the loss of the license will happen before a waiver could issue. In Mr. Boniface's case, he had already lost the license before TSA made its waiver and eligibility determination in August.
Well, in the normal course of things, there's a 30-day period in which he could present evidence supporting a waiver. Is the burden of the 30 days the problem here?
No, Your Honor. The burden of the 30 days is not the problem. We believe that the burden of production can and should be on the driver. The problem here is that Mr. Boniface was pursuing an appeal. His appeal was converted into a waiver request.
That's a problem, but that's not a problem of retroactivity. Right? That's a separate point that you're making in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that the lack of an individualized determination here, the fact that the waiver ineligibility determination was based on a flawed record, and the critical component of a waiver determination was missing, that it couldn't be a present finding of security threat. And because it wasn't a present finding of security threat, it was resting solely on the 1975 conviction alone, that was acting as a trigger, as a per se disqualifier, and that's where we believe the record.
You say it's per se, but it's per se subject to a waiver procedure. Right? So it's really more like a presumption.
No, Your Honor, it's not operating as a presumption because the waiver process puts the burden on an already disqualified trucker, a trucker who has already been deemed a threat by TSA's regulations. What happens is that if TSA makes a match between the criminal convictions that are listed as disqualifying in its regulation and one of those convictions show up on the background check, then a threat assessment gets spit out. What TSA is doing could be done by a machine. There's no evidentiary weighing going on. There's no individualized assessment.
And then there's a waiver procedure. Right? So if you collapse these two, and they don't take an inordinate period of time, at the end of the process, he is allowed to present evidence concerning his current status, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And reasons for which the license should not be blocked.
Correct, Your Honor.
So why is it still a retroactivity problem? Sounds like it's been solved.
Your Honor, if the individual was able to maintain the license during the pendency of the waiver process, the retroactivity would be solved if the waiver process has standards. Now, subsequent legislative history...
You've got another problem that you've raised, but again, does it go to retroactivity?
Your Honor, if there was an individualized determination before the license was taken away, yes, I agree with you. That would solve the retroactivity problem.
What is it that causes the license to to lapse or be not reissued? Is it the federal regulation? Is it the state scheme?
Sometimes the state scheme can contribute to the problem of lapse, but it is the federal regulation here that is causing the loss of the license during the pendency of the waiver.
In other words, the state can't issue the renewal once the determination has been made.
Yes, Your Honor. Once the final determination of threat assessment is made, and that initial determination becomes final after 60 days, automatically, the only way that an individual can stop that initial determination of threat assessment, which is based on the past disqualifying conviction, but from becoming final, is to show that they didn't have the conviction, that it was expunged, that it was pardoned, that it was overturned on appeal. That's what Mr. Boniface was trying to do when he challenges his conviction on IAD grounds. But once that final determination issues, the only way that the waiver could happen, the only way that the waiver could prevent the loss of the license is if TSA was able to process it in 60 days. Here, Mr. Boniface's waiver took 6 weeks to process, but he didn't receive the background check to start his appeal process until just 5 days before his license would expire. So that's the second Second problem, that if the license expires before the state has gotten the green light from TSA, before the state has gotten the determination of no security threat, the license can also lapse in that way. So the state can get a red light or it can fail to get a green light.
Why not just ask before the license is about to lapse?
I don't know.
Why doesn't the driver or the state inquire, say, 6 months before his license would lapse?
Your Honor.
Would that solve the little interim problem?
It wouldn't, because the individual is not allowed to support materials in support of a waiver request until he gets the initial determination of threat assessment. And so that would still create the 60-day window that he would have to process.
Well, if that's correct, then every driver would always have a hiatus every year, or every 3 years, however the license law lasts.
And that's the way California does it, Your Honor. They, when the person goes to reapply for the license, they actually issue a temporary CDL without the hazmat until they get the green light from TSA. And that's a problem that the state is creating, we concede. But the way this is operating in reality is that the loss of the license is occurring before the waiver process. In any case, however, Mr. Boniface, even if there is no retroactivity problem, he didn't get a good waiver process. And that moves me, if I may, to the second point about the procedural and substantive flaws of TSA's waiver ineligibility determination.
Is it the process itself that's flawed, or is it the way that the agency implemented the process in this case?
Your Honor, it's the way the agency implemented the process in this case, because in this case, rather than following the rules and allowing the applicant to initiate his own waiver request, TSA initiated a waiver request for Mr. Boniface. It initiated an evidence-free waiver request, and then it immediately denied the waiver based on a lack of evidence. Regardless of the merits of Mr. Boniface's IAD appeal, the rules require that he received a separate denial on that appeal. When he received that denial, he would have been on notice that he would have had 60 days to gather rehabilitation evidence and to explain the disqualifying conviction. He would have taken the care that he took all along this process, every step of the way, in putting together that submission. And we believe that because TSA didn't have this evidence, this lack of evidence, and they in fact wrote in their waiver denial order that they requested it from him and he didn't provide it, that this infected the entire waiver ineligibility determination.
So when the agency said he applied for a waiver in June, that's just incorrect?
He applied for an appeal, Your Honor. That is correct. That is incorrect. He did not initiate a waiver request. The TSA's rules say that the appeal process and the waiver process are very different.
No, I understand, but I just want to be clear, and I may ask counsel, the government, about that, because the decision says he applied for a waiver in June.
Your Honor,
it's not in the record, but I just wanted to be clear.
Your Honor,
all that he had pending before the agency was his appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
TSA initiated the waiver request for him. That's what we call the conversion of the appeal into the waiver request, and that was without notice. It's essentially like a district judge converting a motion to dismiss into a motion for summary judgment without providing notice that the consequences of that conversion could be fatal without providing evidence. And so here, Mr. Boniface.
Let me ask you, if this case had proceeded, he's pro se, he got those written instructions about an appeal and his right also to file a waiver and to submit evidence in connection with the waiver. Here, if the agency was just taking the position that, look, you have a disqualifying conviction, so your appeal is going nowhere, so we're going to speed this process along by treating your appeal as a waiver request, if the agency had just given him notice and time, then there wouldn't have been a problem under your view. Is that correct? Time to gather his rehabilitation evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that time to gather the rehabilitation evidence and that the juxtaposition of the rehabilitation evidence against the background check and the past criminal conviction.
Well, I want to be clear about that, because the other argument is, as I understood your brief, that he had a right to a determination on the legal challenges he was making to his conviction, separate and apart from any right he may have had to request a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor. We do believe that this court could prevent TSA from using the 1975 conviction because it was obtained on an indictment without further force and effect. That is the basis of the IAD challenge that Mr. Boniface presented in his appeal to TSA, the basis of the challenge that he presented
in other words, what I'm getting at is, under the agency's procedures, it gives a person a right to challenge a conviction and get a decision on the challenge to the conviction. It also gives a driver a right to file a waiver. So when I asked you, I guess two questions ago, would there have been any problem with the procedure if they had simply said, look, we're converting your appeal to a waiver notice, but we're going to give you as much time as you need, up to 60 days, to gather the rehabilitation evidence. That's, in effect, also a waiver of his right to get a decision on the appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
I didn't think that you wanted to go that far.
No, Your Honor. We believe that Mr. Boniface is owed a final decision on his appeal. TSA never issued that, and that is a judicially reviewable order. And if this court would order TSA to issue that decision, I see that my time has expired. Thank you.
Well, go ahead. Did you finish the thought you were trying to?
Yes, Your Honor. If TSA were to provide the final determination of threat assessment, which is the conclusion of the appeal process, then that itself would be a judicially reviewable order, and that would have put him in a position to also get judicial review of his IAD appeal argument.
Let me ask you, if I may, these legal issues are now before the court. They've been fully briefed by both parties. The court could just go ahead and decide, couldn't it? I mean, there's no reason to remand for the agency to make a ruling on these legal points, is there?
On the IAD, Your Honor?
On the IAD, on your ex post facto. All your legal arguments that were raised in the appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. This court could rule on the legal arguments, and if this court decided remand would be appropriate for Mr. Boniface to get an individualized determination, then it could vacate the waiver ineligibility order to put Mr. Boniface back in the position that he would have occupied but for TSA's error in the conversion. But the legal issues of retroactivity and whether the conviction was obtained on an indictment without further force and effect and should not be used by the United States in violation of the IAD today are issues before this court. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Benjamin Schultz on behalf of the respondents. Mr. Boniface is an individual who has an explosives conviction as well as numerous other convictions. And in light of both those numerous other convictions and the explosives convictions, TSA reasonably determined that Mr. Boniface was a security threat currently who could not be trusted to ship explosives, radioactive materials, poisons, and other highly dangerous substances.
Unless he could make a showing for a waiver.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
What opportunity did he get for that?
Well, Your Honor, the opportunity was severalfold. First of all, he could have applied for a waiver initially, as soon as he received the agency's initial determination of a threat assessment. Second of all, Your Honor, even if you thought that he somehow had been prejudiced in the sense that his appeal had been improperly converted into a waiver, the TSA regulations are also clear that at that point he could have simply submitted a new request for a waiver, and he could have submitted any evidence in support of rehabilitation that he had wanted. So if, in fact, there was any...
That depends on your interpretation and your footnote, right, of what is new evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor, but we submit that not only is that interpretation clear from the regulation, but, in fact, it's supported by both statutory authorization for that regulation and TSA's consistent practice.
But when did he know that TSA was treating his appeal as a waiver?
Well, Your Honor,
he was waiting for a decision on his appeal.
At the very latest, Your Honor, he knew once the agency had sent him the letter on August 8, 2008, in which it said that we have received your request for a waiver and it's denied for, among other reasons, your failure to submit evidence of rehabilitation.
And now, so what should he have done at that point?
At that point, Your Honor, if he wanted to submit new evidence of rehabilitation, his option was to just submit a new waiver request.
And the agency says we've already denied it. We've already decided that issue.
No, Your Honor.
What under the normal, like if he's asking for a petition for reconsideration, he couldn't use evidence that he knew at the time. I mean, your footnote is a new definition of new evidence.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think this is why it's important to look at the statutory authorization for that particular regulation. And if Your Honor, I'm sorry?
Where is it?
And sorry, if Your Honor would turn to 46 U.S.C. section 70105C1AVII.
Where can we find that?
I'm sorry, it's not cited in the brief because this is responding to an issue that only came up in the reply brief.
It's nowhere here.
It's not in the record.
It's not in the brief and it's not in the record because we're responding to an argument that Amicus raised in the reply brief.
So you, when you said if we would turn to it, you mean at some other time?
I meant that if Your Honor happened to have the United States Code there. But the reason why I bring it up, Your Honor, is because that statute is the statute that required TSA to have ALJ review in the transportation worker credentialing proceedings. And when TSA implemented those regulations for the transportation worker credential, it implemented the exact same regulations for the hazardous materials endorsement. Now that's
The ALJ has already ruled. She's denied the waiver.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the initial decision wasn't from an ALJ. The initial decision was
then
from...
Then he appealed to the ALJ.
And then he appealed to the ALJ, and it's at that point that the regulation said he could voluntarily dismiss that and submit a brand new waiver request. Now, if I may...
If you're asking for a pro se litigant, a driver, to understand something that's not plain from the notice he received that said... He could appeal, and he could also file a waiver.
Well, respectfully,
and said that if he filed, he could not introduce new evidence.
Yeah.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, TSA did provide notice of that, and it provided notice of it in two places. First of all, if Your Honor would turn to page 6 of the supplemental appendix.
Now, all I'm saying is I understand what's at page 6. The point I'm getting at is he filed an appeal. He labeled it clearly in capital letters, appeal. He didn't receive any notice that the agency had decided to convert his appeal to a waiver request until he received information that it was denied.
For lack of putting in
evidence. For lack of evidence. And then he appeals that to the ALJ.
And it's at that point, Your Honor, that the TSA regulations are crystal clear that if he wanted to submit new evidence, he could submit that a new waiver request. And, Your Honor, if I may read you that language of the statute, because I think it's particularly important. That statute requires the secretary to establish a process under which an individual may submit a new request for a waiver. And then here's where the language is really important. It goes on to say, if the request is supported by substantial evidence that was not available to the secretary at the time the initial waiver request is denied. So it's clear from the statute that newness is judged not by its availability to the applicant, but by its availability to the secretary. And in fact, Your Honor, I can represent that it's TSA's consistent practice that when individuals file a new waiver request, its interpretation of new is simply that you didn't submit it initially to the secretary and you can submit it now.
So if I'm a driver, I ought to pursue both avenues simultaneously.
Your Honor, there are certainly advantages to doing that, although it's not required. But yes, it's my understanding that most drivers in fact submit both an appeal or a waiver. Or if they submit one, it's TSA's practice that it will consider eligibility for both. Because sometimes, as happened in this case, an individual will submit something that's called an appeal. TSA will recognize, okay, under the meaning of our regulations, you don't qualify for an appeal because you're not challenging the validity of your conviction within the meaning of TSA regulations.
Was challenging the validity of his conviction.
He was challenging the validity of his conviction, but he wasn't challenging the validity of his conviction within the meaning of TSA's regulations.
What is that?
Pro se litigant. How is he supposed to know, you know, whether or not it's the way you interpret the statute? He's simply saying, I don't think it's a valid conviction. He's looking at these regulations, and the way that he's told to challenge the conviction is to appeal.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's exactly why the agency treated his appeal as a waiver in this case. It saw that he had filed this appeal, and within the meaning of TSA's regulations, the appeal was hopeless. So it said, okay, well, we'll treat this as a waiver because maybe then you'll have a chance.
Okay, now all that makes some sense if they then tell him that. But they decided not. Well, they didn't decide anything. They just didn't tell him that.
Your Honor, we agree that the record contains nothing that suggests that Mr. Bonifaci was notified in writing of that fact.
Or notified at all.
And you're speculating in your brief, that's amazing, of a telephone call of which you have no contemporaneous notes.
Your Honor, we agree that there's nothing in the record that specifically establishes that telephone call, and we don't rely on that except as a prudential reason why this court shouldn't reach an argument that we believe was raised only by an amicus, particularly when in the petitioner's opening briefs before amicus was appointed, he never complained about this issue and never complained about this issue ever during the administrative process.
But he did. He said if he had been asked, he would have presented the evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor, but if that was his sole objection, then the agency did ask for rehabilitation in the sense that the agency said, look, if you want to submit a waiver, here's the kind of things you would like to submit. What he never said was, look, I submitted an appeal, you treated it as a waiver, that was improper.
He didn't say it in those words, but he said, if the agency had asked me for this rehabilitation evidence, I would have presented it. You know, all we're talking about is a fair proceeding here, that's all. It's not that the agency can't make its decisions, you know, in a reasonable manner, but it's just how does an individual work his or her way through the regulatory system?
Your Honor, the agency understands that, but at the same time, the agency has a strong interest in avoiding court proceedings that could have been staved off years ago.
They could have avoided it here, maybe, if you'd given him notice of the waiver.
Well, Your Honor, we believe we did give him notice, and that was both page 6 of the supplemental appendix, where it says TSA, this is sent to him in his initial determination.
No, I know what you're relying on, but that's, I'm a driver, all right, and the state has told me they can't renew my license until they get this clearance from TSA. So I get a piece of paper that says I can challenge the conviction or I can ask for a waiver of this requirement. And so I, as, you know, a literate human being, file an appeal challenging my conviction, saying it's an invalid conviction. And it's not a frivolous argument that he's making on that ground.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, it's a frivolous appeal because the TSA regulations plainly show that he has a conviction within the meaning of TSA's regulations.
What is that? It means that it hasn't been reversed by a court.
Exactly.
And he hasn't been pardoned.
That's
but,
right.
But that is that also at JA6?
I'm sorry?
Is that also at JA6? You say he received notice.
I'm not quite sure I understand your question.
In other words, did the notice say there's no reason to challenge your conviction unless it's been overturned by a court or you've received a pardon by the president?
Well, Your Honor, first of all,
that's a yes or no.
There are two answers, respectively. I think the answer is
yes,
but the answer is yes. And the first reason is when the agency issued its notice, if you look at page 1 of the supplemental appendix, it says the regulations regarding the security threat assessments may be found at Title 49 Federal Regulations, Section 1572. So it's directing him to the federal regulations if he wants to go look that up. But then, Your Honor, if you look at the question and answer, and this is on page 3 of the supplemental appendix, it says, you may submit an appeal request disputing TSA's initial determination of threat assessment. This appeal request must include the reasons why you dispute TSA's determination. It must be supported by documentation. And then it lists the kinds of things that you could demonstrate. Nothing there is the kind of argument that he's making. All the things that are listed are things that would show either that your conviction has been overturned by a court or that you received a pardon, things of that nature. There's nothing to suggest that someone could collaterally attack the conviction as part of the appeal proceeding. Your Honor, if I may, I also want to point the court to additional areas where TSA put Mr. Bonifaci on notice of his rights that he could submit this additional new waiver request.
So you're citing now a supplemental joint appendix?
That's correct, Your Honor. We're citing the supplemental appendix. This is page 3, where it's a question and answers. And it says, can I appeal the threat assessment? Yeah. And it talks about the kind of things that you can submit. There's nothing in there that suggests that the kinds of things that you can submit are a collateral attack on a criminal conviction.
It doesn't say these are the only things we will consider in an attack on a conviction.
That's correct, Your Honor, but there's certainly nothing that says that we will consider this. And because the agency also directed him to the regulation, had he looked up that regulation, it would have been clear that this is not the kind of argument that he can submit as an appeal. But in fact, Your Honor, as I said before, I think that's exactly why the agency elected to treat the appeal as a waiver in this case, was because it recognized that, look, he doesn't quite understand, so we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and we're going to consider him for the only relief that he could potentially be eligible for.
Well, that's fine, but then why not give him notice of that that he can put in the evidence that would be relevant to the waiver?
Respectfully, Your Honor, if Mr. Boniface did not receive notice until the August 8th denial, at that point he still had the opportunity because he could have just submitted a new waiver request.
But well, maybe. The denial letter says you can seek a review by an ALJ to whom you can't provide any new information not previously supplied, or you can choose not to seek review, in which case it becomes final. That's what he's told, correct?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that's not a full quote, because what it's saying is that you can seek review from an ALJ in accordance with the procedures set out in 49 CFR 1515.11. And that's the crucial phrase, because if one looks at 49 CFR 1515.11, it would be clear that the regulations provide at that opportunity the option.
What if instead you look at the form you're given by the agency?
I'm sorry?
What if instead one looks at the form handed out by the agency before you go consulting the CFR and you read, can I provide additional evidence that was not supplied to the TSA? No.
We would agree that if you look at the form that was submitted with the waiver denial, that regulation about a new waiver request is not specifically mentioned. But
it's
that's
not mentioned in any way.
No, Your Honor, that's not correct, and that's why
Where is it non-specifically mentioned?
It's mentioned not in that waiver denial, but it's at page 6 of the supplemental appendix. This is what I kept trying to go back to before. This is what TSA sent him when he was initially denied. When he was initially given a determination of a threat assessment, it says, what is the time frame for a waiver? And then the second paragraph, TSA will notify you by mail when it reaches a decision on your waiver request. If your waiver request is denied, you may seek review of the waiver denial by an administrative law judge or submit another waiver request no later than 60 days after the security threat assessment becomes final. So the agency had, in addition to putting him on notice of the regulations, also put him on notice of this opportunity to submit a new waiver request.
Let me ask you, in your brief at 34, footnote 13, you say, in TSA's view, new, in quotation marks, new evidence includes evidence that was previously known to an applicant, but which an applicant was precluded from submitting because of TSA's mistakes. What mistake are you referring to?
Your Honor, presumably if TSA, I'm sorry, I see my time is up.
Well, I've asked your question.
But presumably if a mistake was made in this case, that would be eligible for any sort of judicial relief under the APA, it would be an improper conversion of an appeal into a waiver.
So if you improperly converted, if the agency improperly converted the appeal into a waiver, then you say the new evidence could have been introduced in support of a second waiver request.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where you were a moment ago.
Yes, Your Honor, and even if there wasn't an improper conversion, the statute that I cited, Your Honors, early in the argument shows that new evidence can even include evidence that simply wasn't available to the Secretary.
Yeah, there's actually no citation in this footnote,
That's correct, Your Honor, because the issue wasn't made an issue until the reply brief.
And, you put this in here, this assertion about new evidence. You said earlier in your argument that this is also the consistent practice of the agency to, accept evidence in a second waiver that could have been submitted in the first but wasn't.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What's the record evidence of that?
There is none. I'm simply representing.
What evidence is there in noticeable sources like your reports?
There's no publicly available evidence. I'm simply representing that to the court. There are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz.
Thank you.
Give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. A few points in response to opposing counsel's arguments. First, it made no sense for TSA to treat Mr. Boniface's IAD appeal as a waiver. There was nothing germane to the waiver process in his IAD appeal. Second, it would have been a gamble for Mr. Boniface not to go up to the ALJ when he got the waiver and eligibility determination, because the letter he got said that that determination would become final in 30 days if he didn't go to the ALJ. As to the availability of a new waiver proceeding based on new evidence, he didn't have new evidence. He had previously available evidence. He had this evidence all along.
Well, you're using the term and the idea of new evidence in the way that we would always use it, but not in the way that we're told the department uses it, and that the statute refers to it.
That's not the case, Your Honor.
Well, the statute does say not available previously to the secretary, at least I think it does.
The regulations,
Your Honor? Is it the regulation? But Mr. Schultz quoted a source.
The regulation, the new evidence regulation that TSA is interpreting is in the ALJ review section of the regulations. It's not in the appeal section of the regulations. And so it contemplates that a person who has already gotten a good first bite at the apple, if they have new evidence that comes up before they seek ALJ review, can go get a second bite at the apple and try to convince TSA that this new evidence should change their waiver decision. But Mr. Boniface never got a good first bite at the apple, and so it wouldn't have put him in the same position he would have been in but for TSA's error to give him a second bite at the apple through a new waiver proceeding.
Where does the provision appear?
1515.11b1i, and it's in, I believe, the addendum in our brief and the government's brief?
Yes, addendum 14. Let me catch up with you. In the case of a review of a denial of waiver, a copy of the applicant's request for a waiver under CFR, including all materials provided by the applicant to TSA in support of the waiver request, and a copy of the decision issued by TSA denying the waiver request. This isn't a list of things. You said 1I, correct?
1515B1I, I believe.
B1I, right. B is request for review. One is the request must clearly state the issues and include the following documents. And I is the enumerate some of the document or all of the documents. The request for review may not include evidence or information that was not presented to TSA in the request for a waiver. Is that the key point?
Does it say in 1515B1I that if an individual has new evidence that they can commence a new waiver proceeding rather than going up to the ALJ?
If the applicant has new evidence or information, the applicant must file a new request for a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor. And so that's the provision that TSA is reading to say that Mr. Boniface failed to exhaust his remedies below. But with the waiver denial order, TSA sent Mr. Boniface the standard form material that said, you can go to the ALJ or this is going to become final in 30 days. And so even if he had a lawyer might not read this provision to allow him to commence a new waiver proceeding. But he was a pro se litigant.
Why would a lawyer? It says if he has new evidence, he must file a new request for a waiver.
He didn't have new evidence, Your Honor, though.
I see. So you're saying this is evidence he hadn't previously.
He had this evidence all along.
He hadn't submitted it.
Yes, Your Honor. The reason he didn't get to submit it was because of the unlawful conversion, because of the lack of notice, because TSA failed to follow its own rules when it initiated a waiver request for him, failed to follow its own rules when it did not give him a final disposition on his appeal. Regardless of the merits of his IAD claim, he deserved a final disposition on that appeal. And TSA's failure to do so prejudiced the entire proceeding going forward.
Any questions?
Thank you,
Ms. Ferguson. Mr. Schultz, thank you. Case is submitted.